From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Arun Roth. Welcome to Consider This from Boston, where a program meant to weed out positive coronavirus cases is actually increasing educational inequities. Here to talk more about the state's pool testing program is GBH's education reporter, Meg Woolhouse. Hey, Meg.
Hey, Arun.
So first, remind us how pool testing works in schools here.
Sure. So pool testing can take many forms, but basically it's a way to test people for COVID-19 that's more economical. In the schools, students swab the inside of their noses once or twice a week, and those tests are processed in a lab in small batches. Anyone in a pool that tests positive or comes in close contact to someone who tested positive is isolated or quarantined, and those people will usually go and get individually tested. So in January, Massachusetts announced that it would make pool testing available to any district in the state that wanted it. That's a big deal. No other state has done that. About half of school districts in Massachusetts have signed up for it. At first, the state offered to pay for it for a limited time, about 6 weeks. But with new federal funding, the state says it will now pay for the program through the rest of the school year.
Now, on the surface, this program seems useful and effective, but there are limitations with it. The first one being access, which I didn't realize. In your reporting, you looked at Chelsea and Wellesley. Both have similar sized populations, but couldn't be more different economically. And you're seeing the disparity with the program, right?
That's right. In Wellesley, parents were able to tap the Wellesley Education Foundation for funds, about $250,000, to pay for the rollout of the program last fall before the state got involved. That wasn't the case in Chelsea. Chelsea Superintendent Almi Albeda recalled hearing about testing for the first time from the Wellesley superintendent and being surprised. She was trying to improve remote education and ensure that students in her district weren't going hungry.
I was like, huh? Like, what do you mean COVID testing in the schools? Are you serious? Like, I can't, you know, I couldn't even fathom it. And so they were already thinking about this. And I was like, how much is this going to cost you, David? Like, I don't have that kind of money.
Wow. So also alongside these inequities, another limitation is getting buy-in, both from school districts and parents, right?
That's right. Even though the state is paying for the program using stimulus dollars, rollout has been uneven. Some districts were reluctant to join because when the state initially rolled out the program, it was for a limited time, and they weren't sure how they were going to pay for it. Other districts, in particular large urban districts that serve students of color, sometimes don't have the resources, like in-house school nurses, to undertake pool testing. You know, make no mistake, these testing programs are not simple to start up. They require time and ancillary staff and resources. Here's Harvard epidemiologist Michael Mina. He's one of the nation's top COVID testing experts. And he says pool testing might be complicated, but it's well worth the effort.
The cost if we don't do it is that an outbreak can very quickly get out of hand inside of a school.
Some parents are still reluctant. Roxbury mom Tarina Harrison was not keen on the idea of having her 10-year-old tested at school.
First, I was really against it because I'm like, y'all sticking Q-tips, you know, having these kids do this. That's not right. They're just babies.
And here's Fall River Superintendent Matt Malone. He runs a district where COVID rates have been high, but students have been attending school in hybrid form largely without testing since last fall.
I think pool testing is a lot of window dressing. I mean, I think it was a great idea several months ago, but now that I'm in, you know, April, we're so far beyond the need of pool testing.
The state says it's not tracking how many students are participating in pool testing, which has also made it difficult to gauge the program's success broadly.
Now, more people are being fully vaccinated in the state. Well, more adults, right? So is this program going to continue into the school year?
It seems that way. There's been a huge infusion of federal COVID relief dollars that will make its way to schools. And other states are interested in what Massachusetts is doing. With that funding, other states may replicate testing. State officials here in Massachusetts said recently that they foresee the testing program growing and expanding into more schools. It seems like this could be an important mitigation strategy moving forward. And obviously, some places have had a head start.
Well, Meg, this is important stuff. Thanks for talking this through with us.
Thanks for having me.
That's GBH education reporter Meg Woolhouse. Before I go, I should tell you what else is up in Boston. Armenian Americans were elated this weekend when President Joe Biden became the first sitting president to declare the massacre of Armenians by Ottoman forces during World War I an act of genocide. Sarkis Ofalian opened the Massus Bakery in Watertown in 1976.
It's a great day. I can't get enough of it. It's a great day.
He posted a sign inside his store thanking President Biden and says the recognition after years of silence means a lot.
Family members that could go back, uncles that my parents, my grandparents used to talk about them and the suffering that they did as they came to Lebanon, Syria, those places during the march.
More than 1 million Armenians were killed in the genocide a little more than a century ago. To this day, Turkey officially denies that a genocide occurred at all and called Biden's statement an example of political opportunism that will undermine peace. Meanwhile, vaccination sites have resumed administering Johnson & Johnson's single-dose shot. This after federal agencies ruled the benefits outweighed the risk of extremely rare blood clots found in about 1 in 1 million people who get the shot. But public trust in the J&J remains shaky. Anthony Petrillo, who administered J&J doses at the Union Pharmacy in Newton over the weekend, says he was encountering some hesitancy.
She was a little hesitant because of the blood clotting issue. They're just saying they're not comfortable. They prefer either Moderna or Pfizer.
And speaking of the coronavirus and springtime, are you one of those people who has anxiously wondered, is this runny nose seasonal allergies or the coronavirus? I can imagine there's a lot of you out there. Well, as allergy season looms, we are here to help. Dr. Lakia Wright at Brigham and Women's Hospital says one telltale indicator is a fever.
Allergies alone would not cause a fever. So, of course, you can have both, but you want to really look out for those systemic symptoms, you know, the fever, the body aches, shortness of breath, stomach upset, diarrhea.
Wright says watery, itchy eyes and an itchy nose are indicative of allergies only and not connected with COVID. And she has some good news. Some people may experience fewer seasonal allergy symptoms this year because their masks can block allergen particles. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo since your mask and more health benefits, I'm Arun Roth. We'll talk tomorrow. Speaking of podcasts, here's one more you might enjoy. On the Frontline Dispatch, host and executive producer Rainey Aronson takes listeners deeper into the story in conversation with the journalists and filmmakers behind Frontline's award-winning investigations. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.